How can I get my friends and family to understand narcolepsy? I hear this question a lot. It can be hard to know how to explain narcolepsy and ask for help. And even the most thoughtful friends and family members may not be sure how best to support a person with narcolepsy's experience. Today, I've enlisted two amazing narcolepsy advocates, Lauren Thomas and Ann Taylor, to discuss this important topic. Lauren Thomas is a person living with narcolepsy with cataplexy. She was diagnosed in 2019 after a long journey with misdiagnosed sleepiness. Ann Taylor is a nurse and a mother of a daughter living with narcolepsy. Ann also serves on the board of directors for Project Sleep. Welcome to Project Sleep's podcast. Project Sleep is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to raising awareness and advocating for sleep health, sleep equity, and sleep disorders. I'm your host, Julie Flygar. We're so glad you're here as we work together towards making sleep cool. On this podcast, all guests express their own opinions. While medical diagnoses and treatment options are discussed for educational purposes, this information should not be taken as medical advice. Each person's experience is so unique, which is why it's so important to always consult your own medical team when making decisions about your own health. If you haven't done so yet, please hit the subscribe button so you never miss a Project Sleep podcast episode. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave us a rating or review wherever you listen so that we can reach more listeners and raise more awareness. The Narcolepsy Nerd Alert series invites listeners to dive deeper into specific topics relevant to living with narcolepsy. For more on this topic, please check out our corresponding toolkit, available for free on our website to download, print, and share. The link to the toolkit and other Narcolepsy Nerd Alert topics is in the show notes, or you can go to project-sleep.com. Welcome. I'm Julie Flygar, President and CEO of Project Sleep, and I'm out here in Los Angeles. Just want to have everyone say hi really quick. So we have Anne. Hi, Anne.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good. And where are you?
I'm in Northern Virginia, right outside of Washington, D.C.
Awesome. And then we have Lauren Thomas. Hi, Lauren.
Hi. I'm joining from Rybrook, New York. That's right outside New York City.
We're so honored and excited to have both of you joining us today. Lauren, do you want to go ahead and take us through your experience with people supporting you through their actions first? And then we'll get to communication skills next.
Sure. I would say since the pandemic, I used to live by myself in New York City. So when I was diagnosed, I lived alone. I feel like my support wasn't, I guess, as intimate as it has since became since I moved home during the pandemic. So I feel like I didn't really have those conversations or confrontations, so to speak, about needing support. So I think since moving home, there really had to be a lot of conversations. I just kind of wanted to feel understood. And I think that that's something that we all can relate to. But I think that there's a lot of shame, especially for the person with narcolepsy when, you know, they're in an environment with other people that aren't typically, I mean, anyone that's, you know, kind of used to seeing their sleepiness, seeing their cataplexy, seeing their moodiness, that it was really important that my family understood. And I thought it was really sweet that they all definitely went out of their way to look for resources. I can't remember if it was my mom or my grandma, but they gave me Julie's book. And, you know, a lot of my family members have read it and now friends have read it. And we got to hear about Julie's perspective, which is even how I got connected with all of my new friends, different podcasts. And, you know, my dad will look up YouTube, and even through his work now, he is really kind of all in on sleep advocacy. And I don't know, it means a lot to me just to have them do their own research. And then also to be able to kind of, I guess, observe my daily situation and just see that, yes, it kind of comes in waves and everything is different. But if they kind of just even have a baseline of it's a neurological disease that I need to take naps and I can't really help it. And I think it just makes me feel safer, more protected, more loved and supported. And then just being able to participate in World Narcolepsy Day was, I think, the first event that we all really participated in as a family. Just kind of activities like that have just draws together more as a family, not even just as a support system for me personally, but my older brother. It's just like their activities that just bring us closer together and make us support one another and then kind of spark other conversations about how one can best support each other. My mom's definitely the main caretaker of the family, as I'm sure Anne can relate to that as well. But there are times when, you know, I'm really tired and need help, but I'm also aware that she's really tired, even though it's not the same as my tired. There have definitely been conversations where I need to be respectful of that. And we both kind of have had to work on our communication and understanding of it may be different and everything is valid and support and communication. That's just kind of, I think, the baseline of our successful quarantine.
Have you had anyone attend doctor's appointments with you?
Yeah, definitely in the beginning, my mom normally attends the doctor's appointments with me. My dad definitely, if there's ever any, you know, hospital stays, he's really great for the overnight support. But for the day-to-day, my mom was definitely with me for, you know, my sleep study and early appointments. And if there ever is kind of a time where I am feeling extra sleepy or I really didn't get sleep that night before, sometimes I'll give my mom a heads up and say, you know, hey, I'm sorry, I know we didn't plan this, but I'm not sure if I'm going to really be able to comprehend anything that's going on in this appointment. Can you come meet me here? Or can I put you on speakerphone just to like make sure that everything's checked out? And 9.9999 times out of 10, she'll drop what's going on to make sure that she can be my advocate. And it's really helpful just in terms of my memory and I think just the effectiveness of the appointment.
Yeah, I actually haven't ever had a loved one attend a doctor's appointment with me, probably because I was further away from my family physically when I was diagnosed, but I've heard so many good things about that experience. Also, if you have loved ones that don't quite get it, that this can be a way to hear a medical professional, because a lot of people hold medical professionals like in such esteem. But if you're face to face with them, that can really help some people come along in their journey of getting it. And I obviously, if anyone's read my book, they know how much the Narcolepsy Network conference meant to my dad and how that was just the thing that clicked for him, was seeing other people with narcolepsy, which was separate than hearing about my experience. It was actually him meeting other people with narcolepsy that clicked for him about the condition. So that's interesting too, that it's like actually sometimes better to learn from other people with narcolepsy. And of course, support groups.
I just want to say there's so many things I can relate to. Quickly, I want to say the podcast, we very often just play them out in the house and then everybody can listen in with whether they're doodling or drawing or cooking at the same time. But there's so much power in hearing other people's stories, because exactly what Lauren said about not every day is the same. And you can only understand as a caregiver and other family members that not every day is the same if you've heard that from other people too, because then you know it's not just your, in our case, our child. So that just helps a lot. And you can tune out if you don't want to listen, but especially for my husband, it really benefited that we listen to these different podcasts and some of your programs that you do on Project Sleep. It just brought the picture a little bit bigger for us. And to hear about other people in different age groups. When you have a child with narcolepsy, it's so difficult not to look too much out in the future. And when I worry too much about the future, I always think about that you, Julie, told me, just worry about the now. And so I keep telling myself that, but it's kind of coming with the role of being a parent. You wonder about how's the next step going to be? How's college? How's the next phase in life going to be? In regards to the doctor's appointments, because Josephine is 16, she's still a minor, so I have been going with her all along. But I have deliberately the last year started to prepare her for each appointment because I want her to learn. And she's already doing such a great job on how to advocate for herself. So we talk about before the appointment, obviously, and I love this telemedicine. It's so convenient and it's great. And you don't get tired from driving to the doctor's appointment. But we have done a lot of preparing before the call. What is it that we want? What goals do we have? What is it that we want to talk about? Maybe even writing it down. And she's starting to take over and start to talk to the doctor about this is how I feel and what could the next step be. And she's also learning that medication is just only a part of the so-called treatment, but there's not a cure. And very often she has also learned now that it's individual. How it works for somebody else might not work for you. And deliberately, I want her to feel that empowerment, that she's also in control of the next actions. And I know that the better I teach her now how to deal with the healthcare system, the better off she will be when she becomes an adult. Unfortunately, as a nurse, I also know all the potholes and the parts of healthcare that's not working. So I'm also in the process of making a folder for her with copies of all the labs and all the stuff that she's gone through, because not only, like Lauren said, it can be a day where you just have a foggy mind, but it's also difficult to remember what maybe happened a year earlier. And then also take note that doctors don't talk to each other. It is your job as the patient to make sure the X has talked to Y. That means that you need to know the fax number, the phone number, the information of the next doctor. And that can be so overwhelming when you at the same time are battling such a debilitating disease as narcolepsy. So I look at that's part of my job. And I hope that I can send her out into adult life with some good tools.
And when you're done with that, can you come do mine? Because I'm...
Yeah.
Yes, I'll go with you to your doctor.
And that's such a gift for her that I'm not sure that she'll appreciate now, but having to learn and organize it all later on, she'll be such a step ahead.
I hope so.
And you're also just outed yourself as a binder nerd. Are you creating a folder or a binder?
You know, I want to save on paper also, Julie. I'm making an electronic one too. It's just that sometimes it's easier when you're sitting in the office and the doctor says, I don't know. Well, you can pull it right up. This test was done on this and this date. Here we go.
And like all the medications that you've tried in the past, and like, who can remember all of that?
Documentation is the key.
Before we get to communication skills, I know, Lauren, I think you really helped us come up with some of these. So excited to hear what you might say.
Yeah. I mean, I think it also really helped being diagnosed later on in life. I feel like it's weird to put positive spins on such a sometimes debilitating condition. But I think just having more friendship boundaries and, you know, relationships and things like that too. And was dealing with sleepiness for so long that when I got the name for it, I was finally able to just say like, okay, you know, sorry, you know, I can't make it because I'm sleeping because of my, you know, sleep disorder. I had gotten past the point where, you know, I couldn't live a double life anymore. Like it was just out in the open. It was over consuming for a bit there until I got on medication. So I think it's just really being honest about kind of where you are. I definitely know, you know, being a woman that there are definitely like certain weeks out of the month that I know that my body is just not going to function. My brain, my legs, like anything, it's just kind of out of commission. This is a tip from, you know, another person in our community. She says she put a calendar in her phone every month. Like your brain's about to turn to mush, but don't worry. It's because of, you know, what's going on inside of your body. So I think just even, you know, having those alerts in your calendar, and can you communicate that with, you know, your partner, your parents, your roommates, and then just kind of, you know, that you didn't get a good night's sleep. I think, unfortunately, you really do have to take the first step in communicating what's going on, because unfortunately, they can't just see it on your face. You don't have a bloody nose. They can't just look at you and say, oh no, she needs help. We can present very functioning. I think the hardest part has been to take that first step and saying, this is going to be a really difficult day for me. I'm going to need help. And then taking that as it comes, instead of being in complete distress all day and then ending up in the afternoon, really upset, emotional. And, you know, people are like, what's going on? And I'm like, well, I've just needed help in this, instead of just saying earlier, like, I going to need help, but then you get yourself so exhausted. So I think just being able to say that before it gets past the point of fatigue, because as we know, when we're past the point of that nap, I call myself like a toddler having a tantrum. Like there's just nothing you can do about it. I think once you've been able to put that into action, I think your life can just become a lot more manageable. And then people, I think, will start feeling more of a routine and more of a flow, and then even being able to get to notice what's going on and then even what questions to ask once you've kind of started and put, I guess, that first, I guess, invitation to participate in the care.
It's all such a great point. I think the last one is something that was important to me, people showing up in different ways. That was a little bit more about my outer circle, not like my closest friends and family, but kind of like your next level of friends group, you know, and realizing that they showed up in different ways. So it'd be really interesting for me. I couldn't quite always predict that. Just trying to be grateful for those that did. So like when I hosted a sleepwalk on the National Mall, I had a few friends show up there that literally we'd never really talked about my narcolepsy, but they could do that. You know, they could, that maybe they didn't want to sit and have tea and talk about narcolepsy, but they could show up at an event I was hosting and be there physically, when other friends I was actually closer with, I thought about my narcolepsy, didn't show up. So it's just, and I always try to not see that in the negative way of those that didn't, but more just take the love from wherever it comes from and the support.
Totally. Yeah, like I've had certain friends that, you know, need to do their research and kind of need to get an understanding on their own. And then I'll have other friends that text me weekly or, you know, frequently just to kind of check in, ask how I'm doing, ask if I need any help getting my medications. And then there's other friends that just will donate if I'm doing the sleep-in. And I have other friends that do neither, which is also fine. And we talk about Grey's Anatomy and our relationship is just as full in other ways. So I think it definitely had to be something where I've had to level my expectations. And it's definitely been through trial and error, but now I'm definitely, I think, getting a hold of my own ego.
Anne, is there anything you want to mention?
I mean, I will live with flexibility with plans. You have to be flexible because not one day is the same as the next. I talked to Josephine a little bit before I was going on and I said, you know, are there anything that you want to tell me about? And she said, no, you just always anticipate my needs. And I think one of the things as a caregiver, you guys talked about that when you, for example, wake up from a nap and your mind is foggy or maybe your mood is a little bit far from being pleasant. That has been a struggle for us as caregivers, my husband and I especially, to learn when is it just that you're just moody or when is it that it's narcolepsy and you never know which one. And I've actually just come to find out if I just put a big glass of either water or coconut water or something next to her after she wakes up, and she'll come 20 minutes later and she'll say thank you. And it's just also just know as a caregiver, that is not the time to start to say, hey, did you do your homework? You have to really be flexible and feel the room a little bit. But all those things are easier to do when you have an understanding of what narcolepsy is and how it presents itself and how each day is different. It also means that you can't maybe plan like a long, long event. Or maybe it is better to have, before COVID, to have friends over for dinner than going somewhere, because then at least she could withdraw to her room when she just needed to be by herself. All these things, all this flexibility has to be part of our everyday lives. And some days maybe she wants to go and do something, and other days she says, no, I just want to lay here on the couch. And it's not, I can't sleep, but I'm just going to lay here and just watch TV. And that to the naked eye for other people coming in from the outside that don't know about narcolepsy could just present as a lazy teenager. So when we had in-person schooling, I always start the school year off hosting a meeting with all the teachers and the counselors. And I look at it from a professional standpoint. I present what narcolepsy is and I give them all these printouts from Project Sleep, but then I tell them in details about what Josephine's needs are. But those things are extremely important. And then I have to reiterate it sometimes throughout the year. But you need to teach everyone that's involved in your child's life to be, please be flexible with the plans, because maybe in the beginning of the school day, she's good. But the rest of the day, she might look like she's there and her eyes are open, but she's not there. So there needs to be some compassion and some understanding so that, yeah, I can definitely relate to the flexibility.
Communications, which maybe we should have started with and got to actions.
Yeah.
I just love this quote. I'll just read this first. Do you want to vent or do you want advice? Just learning now after 40 years on earth, this might be the most important question to ask whenever a friend or loved one is upset. And I just think this has been so powerful for me in the last 10 years, maybe to communicate back to very well-meaning friends and family sometimes, that I really often just want to vent. It's my personality to need to share into space and not quite being ready yet for fixing. I just love that quote and just wanted to read it.
I can totally relate to that quote. And I feel like I've said something similar to people in my life recently. And I'm not sure if it's just because I feel like we have limited hours of the day where we are wakeful and it's kind of, you know, in different segments. So I know for me personally, I feel like I kind of have to take advantage of that time. And so, you know, sometimes when I'm just trying to have a lighthearted conversation and just kind of share what's going on about me, like I don't need a list of, okay, well, let's, you know, do this. And okay, well, who can we do for this? I'm like, no, like, I'm just telling you what's going on. Like, I can't take on more. I'm just letting you know what's going on. So I think this quote is a perfect way for me to communicate that. Allowing for sadness has definitely been something that I have leaned into a lot. And I think especially having, I think, this community and knowing that I'm not alone in it, I think has made it easier for me to kind of lean into the sadness without feeling like I'm overreacting or, you know, I'm going to be judged, because it sucks sometimes. And then other times, you know, you get to do cool things like this, which is great. I think the people that I've stayed closest to since my diagnosis, I think have been definitely the people that I've just naturally felt comfortable being able to ask for help with, being able to be sad with, without having to think twice about how they may perceive it.
That's why social support is so important. Well, when you're talking about the fixing versus the listening, Lauren, I'm the parent. And, and it's just, as a parent, we just want to fix things. Okay, you're hurting. Okay, what can I do to fix it? And I feel sometimes, because I'm a nurse, I'm like, okay, yeah, well, I kind of know at least how some of the healthcare system is working. So there's some things I should be able to fix. And so it's, I'm really working on to, I wonder if I should just listen and not say a word. And sometimes she'll just say to me, I'm just going to say something. You don't really have to answer me. Okay. And then you just sit with it. But then you, as the one that are listening, you also have to figure out where do you then put what you're now getting, right?
Yeah.
Can I just filtrate it out? And then, but for me, the social support is everything. What I'm getting through all of these groups is crucially important, because it can be so isolating otherwise.
And I remember you said something too before about being a nurse, and there was something that you sometimes say to patients that always stuck with me when maybe you couldn't solve anything, but you would say something, I'm sitting with you.
I'll just sit with you.
Mm-hmm. And it actually comes from a place of daring to be present in a maybe otherwise uncomfortable situation. But just that another human being will sit with you just reduces your isolation instantaneously. So sometimes you might not have any good words, any band-aids to put on. So it could just be, I can see that you're upset. I'll sit here with you. And then that's just it.
And it does make all the difference from someone that's been sat with.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I'll just add, avoid the temptation to make it about you. We have a quote here on this next one, which goes to this point very well. When life gives you lemons, I won't tell you a story about my cousin's friend who died of lemons. We all have such a desire to connect with each other. And having had my dad pass away, this is probably the example for me where it mostly comes up. When someone else says something about having a dad pass away, my instant, I want to be like, me too, me too. But it's very hard, but I've learned to stay present with someone and not make it about me and stay present with them based on my understanding of having that, but about keeping about them and not transferring it back to my own experience or my cousin's friend's experience or trying to relate in that way. It can switch it, you know, away from supporting someone that's having that moment of desiring their support and not supporting you back or learning about your cousin's friend or anything like that. So I just thought that was a good quote about that and a good reminder. Communications about things to say.
So I prefer how are you feeling rather than are you okay? Personally, that's kind of, I don't know, I guess just a little tick that I have, because generally, like, am I okay? Like, no, I'm exhausted. I'm so tired. I'm, you know, like in pain. I feel weak. I can't see straight. But like, how am I feeling? I feel like just allows for such a broader share of positive emotions. I just think, are you okay? Honestly, it just doesn't seem as compassionate, in my opinion, as like wanting to know the whole spectrum of what's going on, because I can't answer that in a good or bad sort of way. I think being able to offer, if you need anything, this is available for you, instead of just saying like, hey, you should go do this, because I think sometimes people try to be really helpful, but sometimes they may overstep a little bit. Instead of just offering what's going on, and then I can use my own sense to feel what's going on with my body, to use the resource that's very generously given, I'm very grateful for. And then also just acknowledging that, like, you don't really know what to say, but you want to be good. Like, that's an amazing, honest, supportive thing to say to someone. But I feel like it really also goes with the just sitting with you.
Yeah. I agree with you. I've done the mistake as a mom to say, good morning, how did you sleep? And that's not such a good thing. And the answer most of the time is, I have a sleep disorder. What do you expect? Oh, yes, that's right. I'm so sorry. But you learn from your mistakes, right?
Yeah. That's probably good practice. I feel like people talk about sleep in the workplace. You know, when I was working full time outside of this job, and, you know, people are like, oh, I didn't sleep well last night, I'm so tired. And I have found that I can't personally, I can't act at work, especially how I feel.
I know.
Yeah. And then this one, you're so lucky you get to take naps. It's just kind of, I feel like there are some things that are almost like word vomit when people are trying to connect with you about, you know, what's going on. And you're like, you know, I have narcolepsy, I have to take prescription naps. Instead of like hearing you have a neurological disorder that takes away time from your day because you need to go rest, somehow they hear like, oh, you get to take a nap. Like, no. So I think that also is just kind of goes to the more like, are you actually listening and absorbing to what I'm saying? Or are you just waiting to say something positive?
Man, there's the quote of the day. Sorry. I was just like,
I think we kind of covered a lot of these, but Anne, I feel like the one not to talk, that's a good one. I feel like you had some.
Yeah. And then there's days where you feel like you have the energy to explain it to everybody. I have often heard if Josephine has been sleeping in my lap out in a public space, it's been, oh my gosh, that must be so nice just to be able to fall asleep, even though that you're out with so much noise, or, oh wow, she's just sleep dozing away. Isn't that something? And then there are days where you want to say something, and then there's days where you just don't have the energy and you just smile and wave and you're like, okay, whatever. And I think that's okay too, because I can't be teaching every day, and you have to also choose your battles.
Yeah. We'd kind of talked about this, I think, when not to talk, not after a nap.
After a nap, not on just waking up.
Not late at night for most part.
Yeah, not without.
Not too early in the morning. So a lot of things.
What did you do today that made you feel good? I think that's something that I even try to ask myself every day. As someone that has a chronic illness like this, like, it is really important to check in and make sure that, yeah, like, this day was great. I wouldn't want to not have this day, and like being able to keep it in check and keep it in perspective. And then if there's times where there's nothing that made you feel good that day, and maybe you have a couple of those days in a row, maybe like alert one of your friends, your family members, if you have a therapist, if maybe it's time to seek a therapist, some of the support groups. But I think even having that kind of check-in with yourself can put you in touch of the times when you more need support, and the support's there.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Okay. Supporting the supporters, because I think every relationship's a little bit more complex. Kind of made an assumption through this that one role or the other that we each play. So sometimes we all are also supporting other people. But when we do think about this, as far as the people that are taking on some more of the caregiving, Anne, do you want to talk about how you manage? Because it sounds like you're a super mom doing quite a bit, and I'm ready for my binder after you finish. For yourself.
It's on the list. I'm not a super mom. I'm a human being with a million flaws like everybody else. I'm a work in progress. I'm working a lot on and have been working on for many years to remember to take care of myself too. And I think it's important to pinpoint that, because nobody here is a superhuman, and humans have flaws, and I have as much physical and mental health like everybody else too. Once I kind of get to 8 p.m., it's kind of like my clock goes out. I have nothing more to give, and my family kind of knows that too. So I can do most of all my good advocacy and fighting for my kids and my loved ones during the day. But once I get hit like 8 o'clock, I just can't do anymore. So like I said, the garden work is something that's really important for me. But for me, sleep is super, super important. When my chambers are empty of supporting everybody else, I have to really remember to get my own good sleep. Otherwise, I can't. And you never know what the next day is going to bring, right? I have some really, really good friends that I can talk to. And so that helps a lot too. And getting fresh air and remember to get some sunshine and eat healthy and all those good things. And I tell myself, you know, you've done good today. And that's not because I want to speak myself up or pat myself on the shoulder or anything. It's just that I reached the goal. If it was the doctor's appointment, I got what I wanted. And now I can see improvement. Great. So that works. And then I do like you told me to, Julie, not to look too much ahead into the future and just deal with the here and now. For me, I needed to kind of early on find out what can I do that can help other families, because I realized that Josephine was lucky that it only took maybe 3 to 4 years for her to get a diagnosis. But all the years leading up to it, there was other things in the school system that I had to advocate for. And I still have nightmares about this, thinking about how many children that are sitting in the lower education school systems that potentially have narcolepsy, but is just being labeled with all kinds of other diagnoses. So I'm hoping that the more I learn and the more I can advocate into the public space, that I can hope to bring about some kind of change. And the picture that you see there is I went with Julie and with Project Sleep and a whole bunch of other super brave advocates and scientists and healthcare providers to Capitol Hill 2 times to advocate. And that has just brought me so much gratitude and empowerment. The feeling that telling my family stories can bring about change made it just filled my inner bucket so much and made me feel so incredibly empowered. And I believe, and I've met that in healthcare too, other caregivers and supporters of all kinds of other diseases, they feel the same way. If you can do something where you know you can bring change, there was people before me, all the work that you have done, Julie, you made a path that I'm now walking on. So it's my job to continue that path and to make it wider and include more people. And then I also really hope that when Josephine becomes an adult, that she knows that all of you and this wonderful supportive environment of other sleep advocates and people living with narcolepsy, they're going to be there for her. And so it's really important for me that part of my upbringing of her and giving her the advocacy and the power for her to continue a life living with narcolepsy, because currently with no cures, this is probably going to be her trajectory for the rest of her life. There's a group of people out there that's going to help her. They're going to help her also professionally. And so I hope that my work will help her and it will help everybody else that are not diagnosed yet.
Thank you for saying that about the advocacy. You know, and I think some parents that approach Project Sleep really knew after the diagnosis. I always also try to have people recognize that first to take care of their own family a little bit. before doing some of the public advocacy, because, you know, the anger, you can leverage that into action. Advocacy will always be there and these opportunities will be there. And I love hearing how much those have meant to you. And that first point was something from your experience, Lauren, the deep breathing.
Yeah. So the deep breathing I've gotten into, taking a deep breath and holding it in and then letting it out. And it really does help center myself. I've also kind of gotten into a technique called grounding. I go outside and take my shoes off. You know, when I lived in the city, I couldn't do this. So here I take advantage outside of my parents because, you know, we have a backyard of grass. You know, stand in grass, take some deep breaths in the fresh air. For me, actually, if I'm having a really foggy moment, just kind of centers me and kind of at least gets me to be able to figure out what the next task is, what needs to be done, stop myself from snapping at someone because of my own sleepiness.
I just wanted to remind everyone kind of what we've been talking about is that a lot of this is too heavy to carry alone, and to just reinforce through all of this that you deserve support. And we hope you feel that. But also to remind everyone that despite your best efforts, some people may not get it. And so it's not your fault if that happens. We all probably experience that to some degree in our lives in different ways. And even myself, I think you think, oh, Julie, she wrote a book. She knows how to communicate. And I've had some family members say that I don't communicate very well about my narcolepsy. So finding people who do get it will be invaluable. And often sometimes that's other people with narcolepsy in this community. Some resources. We just always like to remind people of the different organizations that are out there. Project Sleep is one of them, but there are other great nonprofits doing incredible, important work as well. So we'll always put these in our resource guide. And for international organizations, please also check our World Narcolepsy Day webpage. It has 27 different organizations around the world. And this is just one. I'd love to hear if people have other ones, but this is a book specifically that I think can be helpful. It's called There Is No Good Card for This. And it talks a lot of different kinds of adversity. And for me, it also talks about infertility, which was something that some of my friends have gone through. And I thought that was helpful for me. So there's a lot of different kinds of adversity talked about in this book, including illness and loss of different kinds. So I think that's a great book. There's a technique called nonviolent communications technique, and there's a lot of resources online about it. And it goes to some of what we've been talking about, but can help people communicate in different, possibly healthier ways. So we're not going to talk about it too much, but just to, if you want to look that up, you can look up more resources about nonviolent communication technique. Your support of us also is very, very meaningful. This community shows up for each other in a way that is so deeply special. So thanks for everyone for tuning in. That is a gift to all of us. Thanks to our esteemed guests. Bye for now, everybody.
The Project Sleep podcast is produced by Carver Sound Productions. For more information on podcast production services, visit carversoundproductions.com.